Hi, folks. I'm Dan Dworkis, and this is the Emergency Mind Podcast, a space where we bring together lessons from the emergency department and beyond about performance when it matters the most and applying knowledge under pressure. We're going way outside of the ER today. We're going to the football field, and my guest, Terrell Bernard, is here, who I'm very excited to talk to. He provided me one of the most to-the-point bios of any guest I've ever had, which is amazing, which is that he is a graduate of Baylor and now a linebacker for the Buffalo Bills, which is like wild understatement of his current ability, his leadership position, and his rising starness in the Buffalo Bills. So, Terrell, man, thanks for joining the podcast. Thanks for sharing your insight and your experience with everybody. I'm delighted to have you.
Yeah, for sure. No, I appreciate you having me on. Excited to kind of get out there and be able to talk about certain things that I've gone through and then learn about things other people have gone through as well.
Right on, man. Well, speaking of, let's start with a lot of the audience here is coming from different parts of the world. I will say they incorrectly might not have enough respect for what they would call American football, what you and I would just call football. So can we just get some basic stuff up on the board for folks that don't know, what is a linebacker? What do you do? And how does that sort of intersect with performance under pressure for you?
Yeah, so I play middle linebacker for the Bills. And basically what that entails is I'm getting the signals and the communication aspect from whoever our defensive coordinator is, which is calling the plays and trying to put everybody in the correct position. After that, I relay the message to the other 10 guys on the field and go out there and line up. And basically my job is to stop the offense from moving the ball down the field and trying to score points. So tackles, taking the ball away by interceptions, fumbles, that type of thing. So all of that is pretty much in the repertoire.
Again, like heroic level understatements going on here. I think a lot of folks would draw the parallel that like middle linebackers are the quarterback of the defense in a lot of ways, right? So you are not just doing your job, you're also eyes on everybody else, and you're sort of coordinating this wild group of incredible athletes and performers to try to get a certain objective accomplished. What brought you to that? Like, why middle linebacker? Why that position? Why that role? Was that always something that you loved, like in addition to just playing your position? Or was it something that you came to in some particular way?
I've always played linebacker since I was growing up in Little League and all the way through junior high, high school, and college. Initially, it starts out as the body type and your physical attributes. Mm-hmm. And as you progress, I think there's more the mental capabilities and, like we talked about, the leadership aspect of it that goes into being successful, especially at this level. That was a huge reason for me, particularly wanting to play that position. Mm. I think the opportunity to try to lead guys that are in some cases 10, 12 years older than me and a lot more experienced than me, I think that was a challenge and an opportunity to test myself. And that was really one of the things that motivates me just more than just going out there and playing the game.
And when did that leadership role click in, right? Because you can sort of imagine there's the time in your life where you're learning the physical skills of football, or there's the time in your life where you're learning the mental skills of football, and there's the time in your life where you're learning the leadership skills of running a defense. And those are, I would imagine, partly parallel and partly not. So can you take me through that sort of development process? When did this kind of role click in?
Yeah, I think when I got to college, it was the first time that I was really thrust into a leadership role. I had a lot of trial and error, and I was a very different type of person and a very different type of leader back then. Just trying to, do what our coaches suggested and finding different ways to reach different types of people. And like I said, a lot of trial and error and a lot of mistakes and a lot of growth. I took things from other people that I had seen be successful and kind of implemented that into how I wanted to be and how I wanted to project myself to the guys on the team. And as I learned how to do that, I feel like that built into me coming into the NFL. And as a rookie, I think put my head down and tried to just do the grunt work and figure out how I'm going to project myself to these guys that have been in the NFL for years and guys that aren't necessarily looking at me to be a leader, and figuring out what types of leadership they needed in their own ways. And we have 53 to 80 guys on a roster at a time. So trying to connect individually with each one of them and pull the best out of them while giving them my best self as well.
There's something really compelling about that, right? There's this idea both that like leaders are who we are, but also leadership is what we do. And whoever's the leader might change back and forth moment to moment. And it might not always be the most experienced person. It might not always be the person who's had most time on target. It could be whoever's there for a particular reason, whoever's occupying, whoever has the skill set that needs to lead at that moment. And that ability to both essentially simultaneously lead and follow, right? To lead the team, but also being a follower of the more experience around you is a real challenge. How did you learn that? What was that like for you? I think a lot of the people listening to this will resonate with that because that's true across teams, right? You can be the leader in one area and a follower in another at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. I think part of it comes from my own inexperience just being in the league. So following guys that have done it longer than me and who have been successful in this league for a long time. And then it goes into little groups. We have such a huge team that it starts out with just leading the guys around you. So specifically me in a linebacker room, we have 6-7 guys. So trying to lead your group and then trying to lead your side of the ball and then eventually becoming a part of an influence on the whole team. And I think for me, leadership isn't people telling other people what to do or just following what somebody else is doing. It's really just an influence position. And if you can move the team in a certain direction, I think that's what I've been working on. The last year and a half was really just trying to find my way of how I influence the guys around me.
What's that look like for you? What does positive influence look like?
There's a ton of different ways you could do that. Obviously, doing what you're supposed to do and following a certain standard for yourself, but also holding guys accountable around you. And it's tough to do when, like I said, I'm looking at other guys that have done it longer than me, that have been positions that I've never been in. But when people see you doing things a certain way and carrying yourself a certain way, I think they automatically just gravitate towards you and gravitate towards who you are and how you do things and the standard that you hold for yourself. And for me personally, I feel like the standard that I hold for myself is in correlation with the guys that are running the team and the guys that have a lot of influence on the team. And so I feel like naturally it kind of just flows together as being a piece that can try to move the team in the right direction.
Some really cool ideas here. There's so many parallels in there, right? But like, let's keep pressing on that thread for a minute. So let's go back in time a little bit to you're starting on the Bills. You're just coming on board, right? So you've had already like this awesome performance at Baylor. You're shifting gears to a new level, a new dimension, and you're finding yourself in a position where that leadership is expected of you from some sense, even from day one, right? And you're in that space. So how intentional were you about that when you first started? And specifically, if you're saying you're going to lead the room next to you, you're going to lead your small squad of linebackers, like what was that like? How were you boiling that down to action changes at the beginning? Was it conversations? Was it different things you were physically doing? What did that look like?
Yeah, I think it started with me personally leading myself and doing everything that I needed to do on and off the field that was going to give me the best opportunity to become a decent player. And once I figured out my process and my routine and how I needed to do things, I feel like it was a lot easier to go and have conversations with guys about how they do things or the way that they see things. And trying to get the same ideas from our coaches or our head coach specifically of how he wants certain things done and how he sees certain things playing out and kind of relaying that message and trying to be the guy that can relay a message from the top all the way down to the 90th guy on the roster. And we talked about it. My first year was really just me figuring out myself more than anything and trying to understand where I fit in and where I kind of merge with all of that. And after I figured that out, leading into this past season, I feel like I was able to do so much more and I was able to give so much more to the guys around me. And that's where I get the joy out of the game and really just the joy of being around a team of guys that I can help and I can look to them to help me as well.
I'm curious what that looks like for you. I think one of the things that's interesting and different about football than about some of the other teams where folks come on the podcast, right, is the operational tempo that we work at, right? Football has a relatively, like incredibly hard, but relatively well-defined tempo. There's an on season and an off season. Within the on season, there are games that occur at a regular frequency, and you know when those are. Nobody's like, hey, surprise, there's a second or third game coming up this week that we didn't tell you about. The other team doesn't suddenly get 40 players on the field and six of them have lasers or something. There's like bounded uncertainty, and it's hard as hell, but there's bounds to it. So one of the interesting challenges about that strength and weakness is that you get to work on that leadership on the field and off the field, during the season, off the season, game day, practice day. I don't know, take that any way that you want, but I'm curious like what that leadership looks like for you in those different circumstances. In your mind, are those the same skills? Are they different skills? Are you training your ability to perform differently in those different circumstances? I don't even know if that question makes sense, but go for it.
Yeah, I think what I got out of that was, like you said, there's a cycle kind of towards the entire year. So when you're in season, when we're in OTAs, when the off season is, and even so far as the weeks, like every Monday looks the same, every Tuesday looks the same, every Wednesday looks the same. And so I think you get opportunities throughout the year as you get more comfortable in a routine of when you can insert yourself and when you can really try to make a difference and when guys are going to be open to listening to things that can help redefine the season or redefine this upcoming week. So the predictability of that makes it a lot easier because, like you said, you know when the game is and you know what each day of the week looks like in terms of scheduling and in terms of practice, extra film work, that type of thing. The cyclical nature of it, I guess you could say, would make it a lot easier to be able to insert yourself to really just be that positive influence day to day, week to week.
So you're able to project over the flow and pattern of what's happening and to think to yourself in some sense, okay, here's where I can make a different type of difference. Here's where I can really push. Here's where I should loosen off a little bit. I'm reading that right?
Exactly.
Because you were talking a little bit about what leadership is for you. What does it look like at different points in that cycle? Like when you're off season, right? Like what does leadership look like to you now versus leadership in the middle of the season?
Yeah, it's totally different. You go from seeing the same guys every single day for months and then guys kind of go their separate ways during the off season. And biggest thing for me, I think, is staying in communication. It's hard to be an effective leader if you don't talk to somebody for 3 or 4 months. I think staying in communication, and it doesn't have to be over the top. I think it's just checking in and letting them know that you're wondering about them and thinking about how they're doing or having those personal relationships that once you get back into the season mode, you're already building on layers of foundation that you've set previously.
I have one more question about this, and then I'm going to tie this back together and see if we can build a model out of this. But what did that look like for you when you were first brought into the team, right? Because a lot of what you're describing is the richness of the network and the relationships of the folks around you, right? Over time, you've proven yourself, right? Both on the field and off the field, as you're describing, and you've shown that you're there for your teammates, that you're willing to put in the work and the effort and that you can perform under pressure. That's obviously a lot more challenging when somebody is right at the beginning, when they don't have that history of having worked with these people before. I'll defer to you if this is a better question to ask about your onboarding, so to speak, into Baylor or your onboarding into the Bills. But what were those moments of transition like? How can a player best transition moving teams? And honestly, how can a team best help a player transition?
Yeah, I think it was very similar going from Baylor to the Bills. As a rookie and as a freshman, you come in and you don't know anybody really on the team. There's no ounce of relationship previous to just showing up. And I think what I had tried to do was to just put my best foot forward and keep my head down and really just follow the guys that had already set what the standard was going to be. And lucky enough for me, I came into a really great situation in Buffalo where, you know, the coach and the general manager and the guys on the team had won a lot of games and they had been very successful before I was here, and they kind of had a blueprint already for what this thing was going to look like and was supposed to look like. So like we talked about earlier, I think being able to follow and to see where I fit in into all of that was a huge deal for me. Just understanding my role within the team. You have guys that come in and they don't really ever grasp their role or who they are or what they're there for. And I feel like that's where a lot of the struggle comes from in the initial onboarding. But for me, I was able to accept my role and accept what my place was and to really try to be excellent in my job at that time. And once you really try to, people see you doing that and people see you understand your role, I feel like you gain the respect of your teammates. And then as you do that, you can, for lack of better terms, climb the ladder a little bit and try to establish yourself more. And then as you do that, I think it's natural that you gain influence.
Sure. Sure. And how clear was that? Did somebody sit you down and was like, look, like, here's your job. Here's exactly what we need from you. And also, here is how we do it at the Bills, right? Was there like a, here's the culture, here's what we do? Or were you just osmosing this and sort of absorbing from all the people around you?
I think it was a little bit of both. As I can remember, my first week, we had meetings where coaches or support staff or the GM came in and explained to all of the rookies kind of our process and how we do things. But there's so many nuances of NFL season and a full calendar year that you just kind of have to figure things out. And I feel like that was one of the things that I had worked on just individually, was coming in every day and figuring out what is going on around me and how I can be an asset and be valuable to the team and to the guys around me. And I feel like people, especially here, value guys that can give them some type of value. You're able to do certain things for guys. You're able to help guys. I feel like that's part of this league and really this organization, is everybody's helping each other. And at the end of the day, we're competing against each other, but we're on a team that will go and compete against other people eventually. And I feel like that was the process that I had to learn.
So I'm hearing something that is approaching a list of commandments for somebody entering a new team, right? There's this sense of try to learn your role at the beginning. There's the sense of be super curious, both about the people around you and the people that are a little farther from you. A sense of trying to add value from the very beginning, and a sense of knowing that whatever you step into at the beginning is not your final answer. It's just your first answer, right? This is your first phase into it. What else would you put on that list? If there's somebody listening to this and they're going to move teams, right? In my world, this happens all the time when you start at a new hospital, right? Sure, you know how to be an ER doctor, right? But that doesn't mean you know how to be an ER doctor in that hospital at that system. You don't know the invisible web of communication and influence and how things are done. You don't know who the best and the less best people are. You don't know how the systems work, right? So you're bringing your skill set, but you're really there, just like what you're describing, to come into a space. So what else is on that list?
Yeah, I would say really just it was putting my guard down and being vulnerable and just trying to learn as much as I could. Obviously, there's a lot of egos and a lot of that piece where everybody knows and thinks they're the best, but you kind of leave that at the door and open yourself up to just learn and grow and try to assimilate to the culture. And that was probably the biggest thing for me, was just to be able to open myself up and take in as much as possible of just who the guys are around me, what the team is like, and how I can add value to that. And not looking at it from a personal perspective as much as trying to be an asset to the team. I could care less about how I performed as long as I was doing the things I needed to do to give value to the guys around me.
That idea of what you measure your day by, like what defines success for you, is such a crucial thing, right? That's something we see reflected across all these teams. It's not obvious. It's not always the thing that is, you know, flashing up on the top line, right? But it's that sense of, did you perform the way you want to perform, right? And how do you internally measure that? That's really cool. Let's shift perspective a little bit. Let's say, congratulations, you're now in charge of a team, right? And it's now your job to onboard new people into it. What are the commandments from that direction, right? How could a team really best set up incoming players for success?
Yeah, I think having clear and concise expectations is number one. I think giving guys, which like I got a standard list of protocols basically that we kind of do and we follow. And obviously there's some room for personality and that type of thing, but having a set way of how we do things, there's no really gray area in how things are done. Once you get the boulders of that, then you can kind of break it down into smaller pieces and let the personality kind of intermix with that and kind of feel your way through to becoming part of the team. Because at first, it's going to be tough, a new environment, a new situation. Once you get that, the main ideas of how things are done, then you can kind of go in and find the nuances of that specific team.
That makes a lot of sense. So one of the problem sets that we work with are swarm teams, right? These are groups of people that don't know each other that come together to solve a problem. So in the hospital, somebody hits the code blue button, all of these different doctors and nurses swarm together to try to solve the problem. Maybe they don't know who each other are. They've never met each other. Nobody has, rarely do we have big signs that say who we are, right? And so you have to sort of come together and you and I have to meet each other for the first time at the point of impact and solve this problem. Obviously, this is not the best way in a lot of ways to solve a problem, right? I think what we're seeing here is a contrast between a game with bounded uncertainty, like what you're playing, and a game with, in some sense, unbounded uncertainty, like what we play in the hospital. We know that it would often be better if we were able to have intact teams that have onboarding processes, that train together, that talk to each other in the off season, that all of this awesome stuff that you're dropping about like how to perform at a high level, right? But we don't get that, right? We get whoever's going to show up there. So if you'll indulge me for a minute on this, I want you to imagine like what it would be like to, you're going to get a group of random people. They're going to be on the defense with you and you're going to have to assemble them to play another team. And you're going to have a couple minutes to do this, right? All that stuff you just said, that is your operating system and that what helps you perform, unfortunately, I've just taken that all away, right? You don't know who any of them are. You're at the level of like, what's your name? What position do you play? What are you doing with that problem? How are you solving that? How are you self-assembling a defense around that?
That would be very difficult.
Yeah, right? We're through the easy questions, man. Let's get the hard stuff out of it. Yeah.
Cool. I've never thought about that, honestly.
Yeah.
That constraint where you don't really know anybody and you have to go perform right away is something that I've never done, honestly, and never had to do, especially in a high pressure situation like that. I think the best thing that you could do is come up with a plan as fast as possible. So if that means getting everybody together, trying to lay out a roadmap of how you're going to get this thing done and have, like I said earlier, kind of a clear and concise ways of operation of how we're going to do this, who's going to do what, where we're going to be. I think that would be the most effective way, but I'm not sure. What's your answer?
Good question, right? Like, I think part of the answer is like, we don't know what the right answer to this is. And what you're saying is a lot of what we do, which is as much as possible, we put the systems in place ahead of time before we have to play that game, right? So we might invent a rule that if you're wearing the hat, you're the leader that day. Okay, great. Well, you have a hat on, I don't. Okay, now we know you're leading and I'm following, at least for the very beginning until we adjust, right? You create these systems that make the first couple of minutes work out pretty well. I'm curious to push on that a little bit. This is not what you do in real life, but that's why it's fun to hypothesize about it, because I think there's a lot of like really interesting hidden knowledge in there that we can get at. So when I ask you to do that, I'm curious, what feels the hardest about it? Is it the lack of knowing the people's skill sets? Is it the communication styles? Is it the problem? Because any of those are real, and whatever you pick is the right answer, right? This is all hard. I think it's just a question of like, we're going to take all this amazing depth of knowledge and systems work that you've put together for you and your team, the Bills have worked with you on, Bailey's worked with you on. We're going to distill it for this group that don't have that space and time. So what feels hard?
I would say the hardest part of that for me would be clearly communicating to everybody in a stressful situation like that what their job is going to be. I feel like that comes from not knowing each other's skill sets, not necessarily assessing the problem together as well.
Yeah.
I think all of those things kind of play a part in that. But yeah, I would say trying to communicate what everybody's job is going to be in that moment.
Okay. So going backward from that, then I would imagine that y'all have most of that ironed out well ahead of time, right? Nobody gets on the field and doesn't know what their job is going to be for this moment, right?
Sure.
But there certainly are times when the offense starts a play that was different than what you expected, or they jump in a formation that maybe, not that you're not prepared for, but you're not as prepared for, or you don't understand why they're doing it, or there's something where there's this element of surprise, like something's going different in here, and you have to adjust on the fly. So how does communication for you leading the defense work in those moments?
Yeah, I think it goes to the preparation beforehand. We always have kind of like a checks and balances system. So I have pretty much free will at getting us into certain defenses if I feel like we're not matched up properly or things are just a little bit off and we need to get through the down. There's certain things that I can put us in based on the situation, the down and distance, that type of thing that I can default and get us to a certain call that everybody knows and that we've had a million reps at. So it's not like you're going at it with, you know, something we haven't really practiced. So I guess similar to you're talking about that, you kind of go back to a default layout system and get through the down.
Yeah. And presumably if things aren't making sense, you're not going to go into the most sophisticated, complicated response package. You're going to get your basics right. I think that's very similar to what we see in the emergency department. The more things are off the rails, the more you go back to the absolute basics, airway, breathing, circulation, get the ABCs right, get IV access, do the basic work that sets you up. And like you said, that comes from just pounding those basics in, right? Ultra rehearsing on those moments so that even if you and I are meeting at a patient we've never seen before, we understand enough of the common language to start going while we figure it out. No trade secrets here. I won't ask any real questions, but like about how many of those totally baked in things are you all working with? Is it one? Is it 20? Like where's the, is it 100? Probably not, I'm guessing, but.
Yeah, we've got probably 5 to 6 calls that at any moment I could give the signal for that call and everybody knows exactly what to do. Like you said, super basic, going back to very day one type stuff. But when things get crazy and out of whack, there's certain situations that I look at. If it's more of a rundown, I can put us in a certain call that's going to defend the run better than the pass.
Sure.
Or if we're closer to the red zone, I have a default checklist in the red zone that I can get us to. So we kind of try to cover all of our bases based on the situation, but within each situation, there's a default that at any moment I could put us in and we'll get through the down.
And how does that work if somebody else who's not you on the defense picks up on a signal that something's different? And maybe it's a super experienced player who plays tackle or something. So they're just seeing something that feels different. Or maybe it's a more junior player who's like, I don't know, but this doesn't match my expectation. Can they flip it too? Or is this just you?
No, it's usually just the middle linebacker. But the thing about that is they can always communicate to me if something doesn't feel right or if they don't they don't comfortable in that situation. And it kind of lands back on me to make the decision on if we're going to stay in what was initially called or the checks that we've made, or if I'm going to go to one of our fallback and, like I said, just try to get through the down. That's a huge part of the games, and the communication is you'll have a few guys at a time talking to you thinking things don't look right, or they need to be in a certain defense, or they need to change something. And you kind of have to be the mediator between all of that and figure out what is the best call in that situation.
Yeah. And how long do you have? Like, what's the time frame within which you're making that decision?
Probably about 5 to 7 seconds max, I would say. You get the call, you relay it to the defense, the offense breaks up, come out, line up, and then you have a period of where the quarterback is either making checks or I'm making a check on the defensive side and you're talking to a couple guys. And then once it gets into action, you just go.
I see that smile, man. I respect that, right? That's the joy in there, right? Of being able to like parallel process all that stuff at once and get your team in the best position for success. Like, absolutely, man. That is a different time frame. Different everything, but that's a lot of what I feel scrambling teams up for dramas, right? Like you're like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We've got all these patients coming in. How are we going to divide and conquer? what's the best match of resources against problem sets like that? Absolutely. So I'm really curious about this. How do you study that decision? How do you get better at that decision over time?
Yeah, so that was a huge part of my season this past year. Mm-hmm. And thankfully for me, the coaches that I had around me, they gave me, to begin with, very specific instructions and very solidified points of when to do it and when not to.
Sure.
And that was weeks 1 to 3. And as I progressed and got through that, then they were able to lay a little bit more on me and give me more reins of how I see things. And so as the season progressed, if I could feel something was off or things just weren't happening in the specific time frame of where we were all going to be set up and comfortable and ready to go and play, they gave me more freedom to make that decision. And sometimes I made the wrong decision. And one of the things that I learned is if I make the wrong decision and I communicate that to everybody, a lot of times it'll end up being the right decision. And as long as we're all playing the same thing and we're all on the same page and moving in a unified way, I feel like we were going to be good. And you go back and go to the sidelines after a situation like that might happen and you kind of debrief on it and figure out why the decision was made or how, what led to that decision being made, and you get better for the next time. And I feel like throughout the year, I got so much better and so much more confident in myself of making those decisions that I never second guessed it. I knew once I was doing it, I knew that I was making the right decision every time. So it was a really fun experience for me to be able to go from having strict bullet points and strict operating systems to having a little bit more freedom and putting my kind of input into the situation.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, right? To take somebody at the beginning and to shrink the problem for them and to be like, look, if you see X, you do Y. Yep. Good. Just nail that, execute that, learn to communicate, learn to make that movement. And then we're going to start loosening it up and you're going to start taking over again. That point that you made about a team that is dynamically moving together is way better than a team that's confused about what's happening, even if initially they're in the wrong direction, right? I think there's a lot of truth in that for sure. And that probably speaks, like the success at that probably speaks to what we were talking about at the beginning of this conversation about the work you're putting in with your team and the work your team is putting in with you in both directions to make those connections strong, to make that sense of what we're here for, that purpose really clear. Tell me more if you can about what happens on the sideline like that. So you make a call and you're not necessarily happy with how it went for one reason or another, regardless of what the outcome is, right? Maybe you guys did fine and stopped the play and it's all good, but you know, hey, I don't know if that was really how I wanted to perform. And you debrief after it. What's that debrief look like? How do you judge whether or not it was the right call?
Yeah, we have amazing technology that we can use. So right when we get to the sidelines, we have a specified seating arrangements. So I'm sitting next to the linebacker's coach and the other, whoever the weak side linebacker is sitting on the opposite side of him. So all three of us are sitting together and going over snapshots of formations and plays as they happened at drive before. And so we're going through and he can swipe through pictures of every single play. And he's asking me what I saw and what it looked like out there. And like I said, the fundamentals of why I did what I did and how we got into certain things, it makes it so much easier because you have photo evidence of what was going on and you're able to kind of communicate, well, I saw this receiver in this split and I needed to get the nickel inside of him and I needed to get us to cover two instead of playing cover three because in that certain formation, they like to run this route combination. And having those conversations, I feel like throughout the year built so much confidence in me because I was able to show and listen and I knew exactly what the process was and what needed to be done. And I think the guys around me knew that I knew that. So their confidence in me grew as well. And then as the season went, it just got so much better and so much easier for me.
I am so jealous of that. That is so cool, right? Like what an incredible system to be able to learn immediately afterwards like that and to display to the rest of the team, like almost in real time. but this is what I saw. This is what I thought. This is why I made this decision, right? Because I think so often when you're on the follower side of that calculus, you don't know what that team leader is seeing, right? You're not sure why they made a thing. All you see is your tiny little piece of it, right? You don't know what they're integrating. And to be able to bounce back out and sit there and be like, oh, that's why that happened. Wow. Okay, cool. All right. Now I understand why this call happened like that. I'm jealous of that. That's super cool. I wish we had replay like that for some of the
calls. A little bit different. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Oh. There are a couple of places out there that have incredible camera systems set up in their resuscitation bays so that they can play things back and discuss it, but it's not to that level yet. I think that'd be a real step forward for us to see that. So often we're relying on conversations after the fact, 5, 10, 20 minutes after the fact. You're in the hallway, the case is done. Hey, let's regroup. How did that go? What do we think about this decision? So just, I'm going to ask for your advice on this, frankly. Imagine you didn't have any of that and you had to debrief with your defense after one of those calls. How would you do that, right? How would you still accomplish some of those same goals without those tools?
I think going back without using an iPad, which sometimes they crash and they go down. So you kind of...
Such is life.
Yeah, exactly. But I think going back and having the conversation with everybody that's on the field or has the potential to be in the field of what I saw and why I did what I did, regardless of if there is the video or the photo evidence of it, I think that gives the guys around you confidence in the decisions that you're making. And I don't think it comes just in that moment. I think it's the process beforehand through a million reps at practice and previous games and previous situations where you've made the right calls or you put the guys in a specific position for them to be successful. And I think once they have confidence in that and they trust in that, then it's so much easier. That's a huge part of my job, honestly, is to give them confidence that I'm putting them in the right position. And that's one of the major things that I've worked on and that I've been kind of trusted to do is to put the other 10 guys on the field in position for them to be successful, as well as myself, obviously. It's one of those things that, like I said earlier, that drives me and that gives me the fuel and just the energy that I crave, because it's such a rewarding experience to see something that we did as a collective and the conversations that we had weeks ago play out into this game and see somebody make a play because we've spent the time and we've done the things that we needed to do to put each other in the right position.
Just awesome, man. Thank you for sharing that. What's next? What's the plan to get better at that? Right? What are the next things you're adding on or what are you subtracting from that?
Yeah, I think right now it's growing my web of influence. I feel like I had, towards the end of last season, a good amount of influence on the defensive side of the ball with the guys that I'm communicating with the most. And now I think the next step is trying to bring a whole team together and to try to get with guys that I'm not necessarily with or seeing or talking to every single day. And I'm still going through the process of that, how that looks and kind of what that looks like. But I think putting yourself out there and opening, like I said earlier, opening yourself up for conversations or for relationships and building those connections before they become necessary to have, because by that point it's too late. And I think that's where I'm kind of process of that right now.
Amazing, man. I want to be mindful of our time. I'm going to wrap us up here in a second. All right. But in a moment, I'm going to ask if you have any challenges for people listening to this, something that you want them to try or do differently. But I'm going to give you a break to think about that while I throw this little disclaimer in there, which is that, as always on the Emergency Mind podcast, our job is not to provide medical advice. Certainly we didn't do any of that today, thankfully. Right. But instead to try to bring the best of what everybody else has already learned about performance under pressure to bear, which I think we very much did do today. Our opinions, both mine and that of my guests, are our own and doesn't represent anybody that we work for or with. It's just us out here in the universe talking about how to make it better. So with that, my friend, what do you want to leave folks with? What do you want to challenge people to do differently once they listen to this?
Yeah, I would say something that I challenged myself with this past year and that I'm doing right now is really trying to find out who you are and what makes you go and what makes you tick. I think that was something that really changed just my drive and my focus and my mentality. And if I could challenge somebody to go out there and do that and to find what it is that makes them go, whether that's just their family or whether that's having the pressure of other people relying on you and trying to uplift those around you, that would be my thing. Because once you figure that out, I feel like everything else is so much easier and you can push yourself and push those around you in a way that helps everybody.
Amazing. Terrell, thank you so much for joining the podcast, man. Honored to have you on, and I'm sure folks are going to get a ton out of that.
Yes, sir. No, I appreciate it. Thank you.